Exoskin.
You know, it is really important. We just came off of Western States where 15 miles, the first 15 miles, were wet and snowy. And there's a lot of river crossings. They had a lot of mud. It's so important to take care of your feet. And it's so important to have socks that wick away the moisture and dry out quickly. That's what ExoToes do.
We talked to Mark Cucuzella, and you know, we've had him on the podcast. He's the smartest doctor on the trail, and he uses ExoSkin and sells them at his store. He is a promoter of this product.
Let's talk about the many different kinds. They have a sock for whatever kind of sock you want. They have the regular ones, and they have the ExoToes, which is pretty famous in the ultra community. They have a couple different kinds. They have the anklet one and they have the quarter crew. These toe socks are awesome.
We talked to Chad Wright. We've brought him up before, and he's done his multi-day events in ExoSkin gear and found they just perform perfect, no chafage. His second skin, that's ExoSkin, ExoSkin.
And you can get a discount if you go to our partners page and click on the ExoSkin banner. You can get 20% off by entering the code TRN. NativeDeodorant.com. NativeDeodorant.com. I've been doing it wrong for all these years. I remember playing miniature football. Not miniature football.
It was a small football.
That's what they called it.
So small, you could barely see it.
I was in fifth grade, and I signed up for football, and that's when I started using antiperspirant. And that's what I've been using until I found out about Native Deodorant. And this was only less than a year ago. I've always used antiperspirant because I didn't want to sweat.
You know, Scott, our lymph system gets rid of toxins. And one of the biggest areas to help get rid of it, and remember, our neck is full of these lymph nodes, our axilla area, the armpit itself is full of these lymph nodes, and we need to get rid of our body's toxins. And what we're doing with antiperspirant is essentially shutting that wall and walling it off so it can't get out. And where does it go? It just hangs around.
No bueno.
Yeah, that's not
no
good.
No bueno. Native Deodorant, they sent us some of this stuff, and I started using it, and I fell in love. I was thinking with deodorant, all you're doing is putting perfume on that. And that's not the case. This stuff actually works.
Well, it accomplishes the task. You just don't want to smell and offend people, but you want to stay healthy.
So why would you do that? So here I'm sitting using antiperspirants most of my life. Why would I switch to Native Deodorant? Here's the reason why. Because there is bad stuff in the antiperspirants. Not only does it stop you up, like Don was saying, but there's bad stuff in there. There's aluminum that has been, there's studies that say that it can be linked to breast cancer.
And I'll tell you, just for me, when I use that other stuff, the stuff with aluminum, my armpits itch. So my body's, so bad. It's like I get this allergic reaction. My body's telling me, don't use that stuff.
So Native,
but my friends tell me to use it. So what's my option? I use Native.
So Native Deodorant puts good stuff, good ingredients. There's few ingredients. It actually works. I've been using it now for about 3 months, 4 months. How long have we been using it?
Well,
and it works. It actually works.
So how do listeners get some?
If they go to NativeDeodorant.com and use the promo code TRN, you can get 20% off your first purchase. They have subscription plans where you can get $2 off per stick and that sort of stuff. But it's really, really good stuff. You need to try it. They do have a money-back guarantee also. It's a risk-free.
You run. You want to be healthy, so make sure you start off healthy.
Hey, runners sweat.
They do. Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Don Freeman.
I'm Scott War, and
I'm Andy Jones Wilkins. Welcome.
Boy, it seems like we have not only done a 20-hour streamcast of Western States, but it also seems like we've been doing a lot of podcast follow-upping. Follow-up of Western States.
And that's fun, and today's a very fun day. Yeah. AJW, introduce this guest for us.
Oh, I'm thrilled that Brittany Peterson is here, coming to us from Idaho. Brittany had her first ever run at Western States on Saturday and just had an amazing day out there. And So I'm thrilled to talk with her a little bit about it and reflect back on what I know was a special day for a lot of us. Brittany, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Everything coming together. Your quads are okay. All your toenails are intact. You're not waking up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat.
Toenails are not intact, but everything else is pretty good.
that's actually makes me feel warm inside, Brittany. That the F2 at Western States also is human and loses toenails.
Oh yeah, every time.
Hey, you're relatively new on the scene, at least according to Ultra Sign Up. This is your second 100 miler, is that right?
Uh-huh.
Did anybody tell you, like a coach or anybody, say that second 100 milers you shouldn't run so fast?
No, I guess not.
Well, congratulations. Tell us a little bit about your preparation for Western States and coming into this iconic race.
Preparation, actually, it was kind of, so my background is sky running, mountain running, where, and 50K, which I've been upping that distance a little bit. So it's kind of interesting because I was actually injured in March, April. So I look back and I don't know, you know, when I do another 100, will my training be different? Because I think my training was going to shift anyway for the 100-mile distance. But generally, I do a lot of speed workouts, specific hill workouts, things like that. But I think because of the injury, you know, I was so focused on just building volume, coming back from injury and feeling good, that we really didn't do a whole lot of those other specific workouts. So I'm curious. I mean, it was obviously good, solid training where, you know, leading into Western States, my coach kept telling me, you know, like, I've never felt so confident about your fitness, about your training, about anybody going into a 100-mile race Western States. So obviously, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm like, are you sure though? Because we didn't have exactly the traditional buildup, though we still had, you know, 7 weeks of super solid training with a lot of high volume. It just was different than what I'm used to, which I think it would have been. So, but I'm still curious how it'll be different for next time.
Hey, Brittany, who is your coach? Give your coach a shout out because he deserves, or she deserves, some kudos here.
Yeah. So my coach is Paul Lind from G20 Running.
And please share with us about sky running, because there are some of us that say, you know, we know all about this trail running, ultra running stuff, but give us a little of your history on sky running and what it takes to run in the sky.
Yeah, a lot of vert, a lot of mountain. Well, so Paul, my coach, his son Cody, the Lynn, you know, the whole family story. Paul and Cody are big into just the backcountry mountains of Idaho. And so as I became coached by Paul and then I started dating Cody, we all just were, I mean, that was our weekend training, was just hours and hours out in the mountains in central Idaho. And so really just a lot of steep climbing, you know, there's this traverse in, you know, our backyard of just this narrow, you know, super sketchy ridge to traverse to get to this other summit. I mean, so we were doing stuff like that all the time where it was awesome training because you're gaining skills on, you know, fast descents, managing scree, boulder hopping, things like that, you know, dealing with exposure, dealing with climbing for sustained amounts of times. And all of that just kind of naturally goes into sky running. So Cody, all pretty big that had been racing the World Skyrunner Series. So it kind of just naturally led me in that direction also.
I have to jump in here. I felt like, and this is more for Scotty and Don, I felt like I'd never met Brittany until race day or the day before. And yet I felt like I knew her. And what she said is just why, as you guys know, I lived in Idaho from 2006 to 2011 and traipsed up and down a lot of those same mountains. I think my ego is still scarred from my attempt to go across that last ridge to summit Bora, the tallest mountain. Yeah. But knowing that Brittany's a transplant at Idaho and had spent a lot of time on this rugged terrain, I was obviously really intrigued by her opportunity at Western States, which was superseded only by this in part story, which is her relationship with the Lind family, because I think that gave her really an extremely unfair advantage for anybody for anybody who's a new runner at Western States. And of course, she was not a new runner, but as I think most listeners know, but deserve to hear again, you know, Paul Lind's father, Cody's grandfather, is the legendary Dr. Bob Lind, who was the medical doctor for the Western States 100 from its founding, and was an incredible person throughout the history of the race. And I have meaningful personal stories with Bob, including the first time I ran Western States, and his helping me through some rough patches at Dusty Corners and at Robinson Flat and at Michigan Bluff. And most notably, and I mentioned this to Brittany in a text, a personal visit in the hospital when I had renal failure. And then after my renal failure, literally an annual phone call from Dr. Lind every year when my blood results came back from Western States. This guy had a heart of gold. And so knowing that Brittany was under the guidance of Paul, Bob's son, and was going to be paced by Cody, who I imagine knows the trails down there pretty well. She was not necessarily running as a rookie. How much were you riding on the Lins to sort of, I mean, because I know this has happened to me sometimes. I sort of hand my race over to my crew and they just kind of tell me what to do and I do it. How much did you sort of turn yourself over to the Lin dynasty for this, this race?
Oh, quite a bit. I mean, it's pretty special having that one or so involved with Western States, but then two, like the meaning is so much deeper than just running or just the result. So that's incredibly special. I mean, ever since I've been coached by Paul and dating Cody, you know, we've gone to Western States every year. Every time we go down to the Auburn area, because we stay at Bob's house that's still in the Roseville area, you know, which is basically preserved how Bob had it, you know, before he passed. And then there's rooms designated to the awards that Bob got from Western States, and there's a whole course map of Western States. And so every time we're down there, it's honestly, even before I decided that that's what I wanted to run, you know, trivia and things like that. So, I mean, this race just is in their blood and in their history. And like Cody, I mean, he grew up as a kid going with Bob to every aid station and following along the race. I mean, so they know all the legends of Western States, and they've watched countless times of people who have executed races perfectly and people who have maybe made bigger mistakes, things like that, where, I mean, just observing and taking all of that in as a spectator, and then just at the depth that they got to and they have, has been pretty phenomenal. So really, for me, honestly, I had a monster crew and just amazing, amazing people, but I kind of joke, like, all I need, I mean, Paul and Cody are a well-oiled machine where they know exactly what to do and they can do it super efficiently. And the two of them just know each other so well that like communication is super on par, where honestly everything pushed me on and off I go. Yeah. So it was pretty cool.
It was interesting for me. I know you had two crews. You had the group that went to Duncan and Dusty, some friends of yours from Idaho. And I was working that aid station early in the day, and they came back down the road and they chatted with me, and they were like, Brittany's already in third and she's doing great and so on and so forth. And then I got to Michigan Bluff and the two crews had converged. And you're absolutely right. When you rolled in Michigan Bluff, it looked like you didn't even have to think. Like, you just went, they all grabbed you, not physically grabbed you, but got you and walked you to the tent. And it was like you just stood there and they were shoving food in your mouth and putting stuff in your pockets. And there was a little bit of talking going on, but it really was. It was a veteran crew. And then they just got you out of there and you were on your way. It was.
I am so appreciative. My parents flew in. This was there. My parents still are from Minnesota and are not runners by their background. So this was their first ultra event, and just seeing like the prime moments. I mean, my parents had such a good time and got to witness, you know, just the inner depths of an ultra like that. But then everybody else on my crew was just very, very seasoned, and everyone played a good role too, of like motivators and like checking my mental side and making sure physically everything was good, and obviously fueling and hydration and things like that. So it was pretty awesome.
Hey, I would like to just back up just for 1 second, because there's so many people that have Bob Lynn stories, and I'll tell you mine. And this one goes back to 1997, well before I became a runner, because I joined the sport in 2003 officially, marathons before, but foot on the trail to be able to get on ultra sign up around 2003 with a 50 miler here at AR50. But here's my Bob Lynn story. So I get a chance, as some of you may know listening, I've been a chiropractor, and I had the chance to volunteer for the Roseville Tiger, the football team. And I was fresh out of school and a bit concerned about my capacity to serve on the sideline, to run out there during the game and assess somebody that might have some kind of issue that maybe I wasn't prepared for. And so I did my deal and was hoping on every play that everybody got up. I didn't care what the score was. Just everybody, please get up. And so, that was a successful play for me. And so little did I know, afterwards, a gentleman came down, introduced himself, and he said, I'm Dr. Bob Lind, and I've been the Roseville Tiger football sideline guy for many, many years. I'm happy to hand it off to you, but I want you to know I'm always up there in the stands, and anytime you need anything, you just flag me down, and I'll come down here, and I will I'll give you a hand. And he was there for many, many games. It gave me that confidence, that extra boost confidence is the right word to do that job. And he taught me a lot, and he meant a lot to me. And then I learned later he's holding the gun at Western States to fire off the start of the race. And I said, this man is everywhere. So, I have a personal relationship with Bob Lynn too. And there are so many of us out there that do. We should probably do a Bob Lynn podcast, because the stories probably are countless.
Bob was such a below the radar guy. We have all these legends of Western States like Gordy and Tim and Ann, and I mean many, you know, Shannon and the rest of them. And Bob, I wouldn't say Bob is forgotten. He's never forgotten, but his role in the race and his ever present omnipresence almost. To have family continue to be such an important part, and it happened to be the crew for the second place woman doesn't hurt either.
hey Brittany, I want to get back to the sky running thing. I don't think many of our listeners know what sky running is, and that it is really has a whole lot of races and prevalence and exposure here in North America. Can you tell us a little bit about sky running and how you got involved?
Yeah, so sky running in the U.S. is picking up. It's improving, but I would say the races are still very, very different in Europe. And I think a lot of that, because the Lynn family is a race in the U.S., and just Forest Service or BLM and getting permits and things like that is really, really difficult. Because what Europe does, I mean, they take you straight, like no trail. We are traversing or like getting up to the most technical ridge on some mountain way back there without services and things like that. So really, I mean, in Europe, the races are, they're just, it's such a different feel because you are out there by yourself. You have aid stations every now and again. Sometimes you're on a trail. Most of the time you're not. Super steep, like straight down, bombing a mossy, slick, rocky ridge. I mean, even just like Mount Marathon being yesterday, we were watching some of the footage where you can see like the rockiness of the course and then like amplify that. And now you're on in Sky Race. So I think the whole like idea with a Sky Race is greater than 12,000 feet of vert. And generally they're in the 50K distance, though that varies. There are like shorter versions and longer versions. You know, so we're talking like my background are a lot of 50Ks, but we're talking like 8-9 hour 50Ks because I'm hitting up to like 15,000 feet of vertical gain sometimes in these races. And most of it, I'm not on a trail or I'm scrambling on boulders or, you know, whatever. So some of them, you know, we're running up riverbeds, others, you know, it's like rooted in through the trees, things like that. So you get a whole bunch of different terrain. So when I think back to the series, you know, where there's races all over Europe, you know, every race brings out a different technical aspect. It's not all just climbing, but it puts like the adventure in it. I mean, I grew up in Minnesota on a state park where my coach did an awesome job of just instilling the adventure side of running. Where, I mean, we ran up riverbeds, like through our, you know, wading up to our waist for cross country practice on the weekends. And I just think that adds so much fun. And then the whole side of like my training grounds in Idaho, it, you know, it takes away the training and it puts in like, I want to go climb up this peak. I want to go see how these peaks connect. I want to go, you know, just be in the backcountry where I'm not seeing a single soul and there's no trace of humans, you know, and that's really what skyrunning is all about.
Is that what brought you out to Pocatello, Idaho, was running and that experience of going out and running these amazing mountains with few people? Or was it a job or what?
Yeah, well, I first got to Idaho finishing up graduate school. I'm an occupational therapist. So I got to one of the hospitals in Boise, moved to Boise because I fell in love with the mountains, and then ended up moving to Pocatello when I felt like Boise was getting way too big. I grew up in a super small town in Minnesota. And so just having that untouched wilderness and just a smaller group of people, Pocatello is just that, but I shouldn't talk too highly of it because we want to keep it small. But the trails are pretty phenomenal here. And then really it's only, you know, I can be in the Lost River Range, which is where Mount Bora is. And just, that's like the unknown mountain range of Idaho, even though everyone knows Bora because it's the tallest peak. But there's the Idaho 12ers, which is an FKT that Cody has, and I have the women's version, where all, I mean, goodness, the 12ers, the range is, okay, I'm farted, it's too early in the morning, but it's 7 12,000 foot peaks all linked up. And those 7 of them are all in the Lost Rivers that people really don't know about. And they are super, super technical. So, I mean, we're not as tall as some of the mountains in, you know, Colorado or whatever, but like I remember when Cody and I took a trip to Colorado and did some of the 14ers, you know, gosh, they're just like a road up to the top versus, you know, we're climbing like pretty sketchy stuff in our own backyard, and that's just like an hour to 2 hours from my front door.
Yeah, the Sawtooths and the Pioneers get all the glory in Idaho.
Uh-huh.
The Lost River Range is is truly badass. And I mean, the fact that you're training on there and that's your sort of regular training ground definitely comes in handy. So how did it feel with all the running you on Saturday? I mean, it was, as everybody knows, Western States is a runner's race, and I know you have a pedigree in cross country and track, but did you get to a point where you were like, man, I just wish we could have some sort of 1 mile technical scramble so I can get back to my equilibrium? How was
Fortunately,
it?
Yeah. My training, it's funny because last year at the end of skyrunning, I forget which, I was training for North Face 50, you know, so again, another runner's course. So I remember coming off of skyrunning thinking, oh my gosh, I have to run without hiking. And that was a hard transition. Mm-hmm. But coming off winter and being that it's only June, well now July, I mean, all of my training has been just running, just because we can't get in the mountains and we're not doing as much hiking right now. So really just adapted the training, and you know, now I'm to a point of like, oh my gosh, how am I going to hike up a mountain? You know, because I can go and run forever. So I think it was a good transition because winter and just my training for so long now has been geared in that direction. But I did enjoy the technical aspects of Western States, though most of them are just really navigating downhill sections quickly.
I was going to say, do you think that your sky running prowess and experience helped you with the downhill sections of Western States?
Absolutely. In the beginning, I mean, I don't love running in snow when post-holing and slipping and things like that because I have some hamstring issues that can flare up, and so I worry about that. But the snow for Western States was just, it was beautifully packed. You're on the top. So really it's just being able to glissade down a little slope, being able to keep your footing and move quickly, things like that, where the snow was a huge advantage, I felt, because it was technical, but it wasn't, you know, slogging and post-holing and things like that. That's going to slow everybody down. And I think just, you know, everyone talks about like careful about your stabilizers. You don't want to wear out your stabilizers early and then you're dying later. Where I feel like my stabilizers have always been pretty tuned because that's what I'm doing all the time. So I feel like once we got to like the rockier sections and needing to just be kind of more agile on your feet, you know, I'm accustomed to that, and I don't maybe hopefully feel fatigued of that somebody else might that is more accustomed to just, you know, finely groomed running trails. So I feel like that helps just preserve the ability to go fast without wearing yourself down. And I've talked to Cody and Paul, like just technical running helped me get a golden ticket in Bandera because there was a course change and it was much more rocky. And then I feel like technical running helped me a ton at Western States, where I really think technical running is probably going to help me no matter what race it is. And you can always have variable conditions and things like that where it's huge to have those skills.
I've got to think that sky running is just something as a perfect preparation for a run like Western States. It's a cross training gymnastic activity out there that just hardens a runner and makes them sharpen in every skill that's important in a race. I think it's, you know, coming into Western States, it's almost like a stroll through the park. I'm intimidated by the mountains that you're describing in the sky running. I'm thinking, I don't know if I want to do that. I could end up in a helicopter ride back home, but you know, Western States, I don't think I'll end up in a helicopter. So, you know, kudos to you and respect for getting out there and running those challenging and technical courses and becoming a different runner, a three-dimensional runner, where you can kind of shuffle through, you know, a smooth course. Much different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, let's jump. I want to spend a few minutes on the race. We haven't even talked about very much about the race yet.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That. Oh, we have F2 on the line. We're talking family history and skyrunning.
Guys, as these guys know, Brittany, I was enamored with the way that the women's race was unfolding as watching it in real time. And flashbacks to some of my experiences at Western States. But, you know, what I'm really interested in hearing from you about is the last 20 miles. I mean, everybody knows the last 20 miles are, if you've got your wits about you, if you've kept yourself, if you've taken care of yourself, the last 20 miles are the most runnable part of the course. It's where you can really make up time. There's plenty of aid stations. You know, you can travel kind of light. And of course, after Courtney, and it was very unfortunate. I know she's recovering well, and she'll be back before we know it. But after Courtney had to drop up at Green Gate, I mean, the dynamic nature of the race really took shape with Claire and you and Casey and a slew of chasers. So talk us through a little bit. For example, when you arrived up at Green Gate, you know, you and Cody are in full race mode, split time people. How did that last 20 miles unfold?
Well, it was, so when I came to the river, Paul had been there, so he saw Courtney come in. So when I got there, you know, Paul pulled me aside and was quietly, you know, because we had a new plan, because now we're in contention for the win. So the plan was to put myself in position by Highway 49 of where I wanted to be to finish, which is kind of funny because it ended up being where Claire and I crossed Highway 49 side by side. So that kind of not backfired, but like that was the plan, was to basically work Claire and seeing where I could be, you know, to hopefully put some distance or something for Highway 49, because then the thought is that you run out of real estate, or at least traditionally, I guess that's generally the thought. So really, Courtney was, first of all, I mean, she was just so wonderful, despite obviously being in a bad situation for her. When I passed her going up to Green Gate, she just was so genuine with enthusiasm about how my race is going, that was just so respectable and amazing. So I feel like all of those things, like just this new fire of like, all right, we're chasing, and then just getting some energy. Green Gate is a familiar section. I had Cody, who really at that point I was setting pace. So really I felt pretty good and was able to open up, and I knew that we were chasing, though mentally was in and out of, you know, like as we got further on, I guess was mentally in and out of like, I hope we don't see her, you know, but we're working pretty hard and doing pretty well where chances are we're going to see her, because Cody was on top of it as far as getting, you know, like, do you know exactly how far she is? Because he was encouraging me a ton, you know, because he was keeping track of, you know, we just made up 3 minutes in that section or whatever it ended up being, to a point where I kind of giggled when you said that there was a lot of aid stations, because I felt like those stretches turned out to be so long, like 5 miles was forever between aid stations. But I could, you know, it could be that I'm used to like way too cool, where you're moving a lot faster, though Cody still tells me that I was moving pretty fast, though it didn't feel like it at the time. But really it was, we got to the quarry, that is made up ground. I hit a little bit of a low point, but then the aid station really picked me back up. And then it was just before turning onto the trail that leads up to 49. It was just starting to get dark. You know, we're still in hunt mode. We're working our way up that pretty well. And then we get, like, Cody's like, I see headlamps, turn your headlamp off. So we went incognito, and, you know, just a whole new fire of chasing, because now we actually found people. So ended up catching her just before the crossing.
Hey, Brittany. Oh, yeah. So Cody is pacing you. Did I miss that? It sounds like he was.
Yeah.
I thought he sounded like he was.
Oh, yeah.
Crewing,
oh, yeah.
Okay. Right. Okay. I'm sorry. For those, anybody that drifted off like me and didn't catch that detail, I'm catching you. I'm catching them up. So keep going with this story. It's fascinating.
Remember, and you guys remember Paul, Bob's son, and grandson is just to keep the story straight.
And to give, I mean, Cody, not only like he grew up with the race, but he's paced his dad a ton. Like he knows what to do. So really, like, having Cody as a pacer at that point was, I mean, that was the whole race plan, was just run like you're doing a training run until you get to Cody, and then you're in good hands and Cody will know what to do. So I just had to follow Cody at that point, where really it didn't flip, you know, because I was setting pace early on, but then once we got into basically attack mode, Cody was driving that bus and I was just struggling to go for the ride as much as I could. So that was, I mean, he was phenomenal in just helping me dig as deep as I possibly could to be able to a strong effort. So, was, you know, he kind of said something about like, make your mark, you know, as we caught up to Claire, you know, with the whole idea of like trying to pass and pass with more authority so that she doesn't hang with me. And that my authority was thin at that point. So when I passed her, she basically hung right on my shoulder, which was fun and really challenging. But so we crossed Highway 49, and then we have the climb up to Pointed Rocks, where I was leading that. She was right there. We were both like, you know, it was a friendly moment. You know, obviously in our both of us being super, super tired. So it was like friendly exchanges between our pacers as we were just huffing along. So, but both of us were right there. And then it really wasn't until we got to Pointed Rocks that it was, you know, like this beastly exchange with Claire just kicking it up notch, because it was basically, we were together and we got to Pointed Rocks, and then it was like, hammer is thrown down. This is where the racing, you know, the duel has just begun. And the way Paul kind of described, you know, that picture that Iron Far posted is a glimpse of like how chaotic that was. But Paul explained it as like bottles are flying. Claire and I like crossed paths in front of each other or something. Almost, you know, he joked like elbows were being thrown, and it was this new like fire of like who's getting to the single track first. And like that's where Claire put her move on, and from my perspective it was like, oh crap, I gotta go or I'm gonna get left in the dust.
So I have to say that when I got those splits from Corey Road and you had closed the gap from 10 minutes to 3 minutes, I immediately had, you know, flashbacks to some of these years when two runners have gotten to 49 neck and neck. And so I think I risked my life driving down that road to get there in time. And then I had to run out that little section that you have to run to get to Pointed Rocks. And of course I didn't have a headlamp, and I was, you know, tripping and falling and stuff. And I got there, and the way Paul described it is exactly right. I mean, Brittany, you and Claire, I'm sure you know, I mean, it's probably a blur, but you and Claire were like, you were like thoroughbred horses, you know, in for a, it was like sweat and spit and snot and bottles, and, you know, it was like just like what you want. And I mean, it was just so impressive after 94 miles, and you were just in total game mode. And for me, just seeing it after all the time I've been at Western States, it was just such a great thing to see. And of course, then I sprinted back and got in my car and got down to Highway 49, and, you know, Claire had opened a little bit of a gap by then, but it was still the same thing. Like, you guys came down there and it was no messing around, and it was something. So I was thrilled to see it. What did you make of Claire's move? I know you've talked about it, but I love Claire's move on that downhill, because everybody who's run Western States before knows that if you have legs, that downhill from Pointed Rocks to no hands is, gosh, and I want to jump in here too. And even though you said that those aid stations seemed far apart, I'm a bit of a geek when it comes to Western state splits. And the splits you ran from Green Gate to ALT and ALT to Cory Road and Cory Road to Highway 49 were pretty incredible splits. So while it may have taken you a long time, you were really moving quick.
Yeah, yeah. It felt hard. yeah.
So Claire's move on the downhill.
Yeah, so that is where, I mean, Cody was kind of prodding me along at that point. I had basically gotten, you know, that little mental chip of second place is just fine. but then he would kind of, you know, like, no, we're not done fighting yet. And so I would kind of, okay, like I'm trying. So it was that balance of knowing that she just put a massive surge on that I was trying to match but not able to match. And then trying to fend off those mental cave-ins of second place is just fine. So that was kind of my downhill section to no hands, was trying to stay in it but slowly losing it.
Can you talk about any of the conversation or exchange between pacers or you and Claire at any point during that race? You know, most of us aren't privy to the conversations that happen right up front in a real battle like this along the way. One, because you know, it's remote trail running and people aren't mic'd up. But can you recall any friendly exchange, some competitive spirited comments, or was it all just all business, you know, buttoned up and go to work?
It was mostly business, but so Claire and I, when we crossed Highway 49 and we were heading up to Pointed Rock, she did say, you know, this is where I DNF'd 2 years ago. So, I mean, it was kind of, she said it was kind of, you know, a weird moment at that time, like being together at this place that she DNF'd 2 years ago. So that was, and, you know, in my mind, I was kind of thinking, or maybe hoping, like, oh yeah, bad memories. Like, this is this gonna affect you? But I think she gained power from that memory and helped go to the place she needed to go to finish it. I mean, so really it was friendly aura, a whole lot of conversation. And then, like, Pointed Rocks is when it was like, we're not friends right now. This is like game on. And then at the finish, it was like, oh my gosh, we are best friends. That was the most magical moment we've ever had in a race. And just, and it wouldn't have been possible without each other, which is really, really special. As far as like other things on the trails, I would say there was a funny moment with at the aid stations, because all of the volunteers were just phenomenal and did everything so well to help us out. And I remember, I mean, and then people are obviously telling you where you are at throughout the whole day. And it was pretty funny where Casey and I at El Dorado, so at the bottom of the canyon, at that aid station, they were telling us, because we came in there together, we're fueling up, things like that. And they're like, second place, which was Claire, they're like, second place is right there. Like, literally, she's, and then they're like, first place. Now that's a different story. It was just this kind of funny, like, okay, well, thanks. We're going to chase for second place, you know, but that was the reality of it. Whereas like where Courtney was running at that time was so impressive that that was the comment that needed to happen of first place. Well, that's a different story. That was pretty funny.
Did you find the aid station reports accurate? I mean, you really don't know, but you do know that when you hear one person tell you a story and then you turn to get some watermelon and you hear a completely different story. It's like, wait a minute, you guys are at the same aid station and you have different stories.
That's where, you know, I kind of, in the beginning, you know, like Cal Loop and things like that, I had been paying attention to what they were saying as far as time, you know, but I was hearing things like 10 minutes, 5 minutes, just, you know, so like really it all equated kind of to the same thing of I never literally saw Claire. So the time wasn't that crucial, but then towards the end, that's where Cody was like, especially Hal Corner at the Quarry Road, you know, where he's like, how much time, you know, and exactly, and I think it was like 4 minutes and 8 seconds, you know, where when we got that, like for certain people, you know, we saw Eric Sensman beyond the quarry aid station, and he gave us, you know, like under 2 minutes or something like that, you know, so I think we got more, we were more tuned in onto the accuracy later on, and then we're able to get more accurate information. But before that, just kind of the general, whatever we were getting was good information, and it didn't need to be any more specific than that.
Hey, Claire, I want to talk about
Brittany.
We
started early.
I have this great question in my head. I can't even remember who I'm asking. Hey, Brittany, I want to talk about you know, Tim Noakes's central governor theory and how it relates to elite athletes late in the race, like you were just talking about. You have just run, you know, 70, 80 miles, and you're in the race for first place, and you have arguably one of the best pacers with you, and he's telling you, I know you're tired, but you got to run faster. How does that work in your brain? Are you able to shut your body, the pain and the exhaustion off and shift into a different gear? Tell us a little bit about how that works.
That is a great question, and I'd like to hear Claire's answer too. But Brittany, what do you got? That is a great question, yeah. Scott.
No, I would like to hear Claire's answer. I mean, that was like an unhuman thing that I was able to witness. Because, I mean, for me at that point, I feel like I, you know, when I look at my strengths and my weaknesses, I would say that a weakness is like closing like that, like needing to close super strong and fighting it out until the end and keeping that mental sharpness. Where I kind of look back on, I feel like I did a really good job of that in the chase. And then it was like my goal, and I should have, maybe that's something I need to focus on, is like really being conscious that my chase is not over when I catch. Because I feel like that was kind of my downfall, is I was super sharp while I was chasing, and then it just kind of, the juice ran out after I caught. when really I needed to access a whole deeper level to be able to do what Claire did and to be able to really contend for the actual win. So really you know, Cody knew, like, one of the beautiful things about having Cody as a pacer, like, we know each other really, really well, where he knew exactly what to say, exactly what to do to help me get out of my head and to really just refocus and keep digging. You know, because he kept saying the whole way down from Pointed Rock, he's like, I know it hurts, but keep moving. You know, like, there's no regrets here. Keep moving. Keep pushing. I know it hurts. It's almost over. You know, things like that, where that helped me. But then, yeah, it did run a certain point where I would like to, I mean, you only get so many opportunities to practice that, but it's like, I'm still baffled at, like, how did Claire pull off what she pulled off? Like, that is so impressive, because I just ran out and wasn't able to get to that insanely deep level of pushing beyond pain. I mean, she was to run the fastest, you know, course record on Strava up to Roby Point. It's just baffling how she did that.
Wow. I didn't realize that. And I don't want to throw Paul under the bus, but you know, he said, catch her by 49. And so you did. And
yeah, so, yeah.
And he didn't have any further instruction.
Yeah. So if that,
well, if
the finish line was there, brilliant. But I do know that in life, because we've all experienced life, whether we're running up front for a Western States Cougar or we're just trying to get a training run finished, when you set your goals and you hit it, then some of that motivation, some of that mojo, some of that inner push just kind of drops off a cliff. It's like done. And it's hard to regain a second push sometimes. And so, you know, I listened to what you were saying and could put myself in your fast shoes for a moment and think, yeah, you know, once you hit that spot, you've run all day long and you hit that goal that your coach said, you got to get her by this point. Then it's only human to take a deep breath in. And when you took a deep breath in, she was taking, she was blowing out.
Well, and the number, I mean, the numbers don't lie. Brittany ran the second fastest ever from the river to Pointed Rocks. Only Courtney last year did faster. She had 3 hours and Brittany was just 3:02. And then yet, of course, Claire's Pointed Rocks to the finish is in the top 10 among the men. You know, the way she ran 51 minutes from Pointed Rocks to the finish. So you, I mean, obviously it wasn't your plan, but the fire you lit for her to run 51 minutes she ran faster than Jared Hazen from Pointed Rocks to the finish. So
that makes me feel a lot better. Yeah. Like that's magical what she did, really. And that's where, you know, Paul, Cody, and I, as we're reflecting, it's like, well, that's a pretty darn good problem to have. Like, how could we have dug to that next level to get first instead of second? Like, okay, second is still pretty darn phenomenal. That to be able to be in this position and be looking at this is just still amazing.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. I mean, we're celebrating with you. It was an amazing accomplishment, and like AJW said, one of the fastest times recorded from you in that section where you caught her really speaks to your speed and your competitiveness and your strength as a runner. We're not done hearing from Brittany Peterson, that's for sure.
Yeah, so speaking of that, I know I asked you the night of the race, and I think you were kind of mad at me for asking you, but are you coming back next year?
Oh, you know, I'm very surprised at how quickly I have forgotten everything, and I'm game on for Western States 2020.
Oh, that's great news. That's great news.
Yeah, it doesn't take long for that for some of that pain to slip away, and that's always, there's a lot of mysteries out there in this sport, and that's one of them. How can we go back willingly when we know that there's some pain and suffering waiting? Because there's never a long race like that that doesn't dish out a bit of what for, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Hey, Brittany, have you ever, I just lost my question.
Well, you're thinking of it. Had you ever raced Claire before? Did you guys have some race history, or was this the first time?
Yeah, we've had a little bit of race history. I guess 2 years ago at North Face 50, but that was when I was really just entering the competitive scene at an elite level, I guess. But then this year we ran Way Too Cool together, which I was hoping to go back and win it. But I had a bad race that day. So that didn't really bother, or, you know, there was no competitive spirit of us, but it was actually pretty good. I'd gotten to know Claire a little bit more this winter. She was at Running Up for Air in Salt Lake, which is basically my backyard. So we met up there and we're hanging out. I didn't race, but I was cheering and supporting. And then Luke Nelson, who also runs for Patagonia and lives in Pocatello here with me, he puts on Scout Mountain Ultras. And so he had this 100-mile, 29K or whatever the distances are. But anyway, so Claire came up for that, and I actually had the course record for the short distance. And she ran it, and she beat my course record. So I was kind of joking with her after that, you know, where we got to know each other even better, hanging out in my hometown, where I said, like, before the race, I'm like, you better not beat my course record, you know, joking. And then after Western, I was like, all right, girl, like, first you beat my hometown course record, now you take away first in Western States. gained. Yeah. So I feel like now, like just with the last like 6 months of our experiences, I just feel like that has expedited our friendship, as well as like a very friendly competitive spirit between the two of us, where I think she had said somewhere, you know, she's like, yeah, I was telling people like, I'm terrified to raise Brittany now, which is a pretty fun thing.
Well, it's fun to see a rivalry in getting set up here, and some years in the future, we'll be watching this go down.
You know, the thing,
yeah, it'll be fun.
Brittany, the thing that I love about ultra running is, you know, you look at, and I'm just going to throw out some random sports. Let's say tennis.
All right.
And two top competitors, you don't see them as friendly as we do in ultra running. At least that's my perception. You see them very competitive, very businesslike. You know, they may shake hands over the net after they're finished, but they're not going out on the town that night to play with each other, oh, right?
Yeah, and Claire was waiting at the finish line and just clapping and embracing as a fan of yours for the chase, appreciating the competition and showing so much respect. And that's one of the images that sticks with me is her face was genuine and her body language was genuine of just welcoming you to the finish and celebrating such a strong, strong day with you. And so to Scott's point, it was real, it was genuine, and it was wonderful.
Oh, yeah. And that, I mean, the whole day was filled with those moments with, you know, I just feel like that's why our sport is so special. Like even just going up the escarpment where there's a big pack of us ladies and Casey turns around to look at the sunrise and says, everyone come over here. And, you know, we all like link arms and it's just a really special moment. And I think that carries, you know, where everyone wants to do well for themselves and we're competitive, you know, but really, and I feel like the 100 mile, which is what Paul kept telling me, is you'll find that you're not really racing anybody anymore. You're truly just racing yourself. You know, who can hold on the strongest, the longest, because I mean, sure, it turned into a race, of course, but I mean, I think that's true where it's just, you want to do and push what's best out of you, but you're so happy to see everyone else doing the same for themselves. And how can you play a part in that by being like a chipper face to give them a energy boost or something like that? So I just think it's really, really special where I'm super competitive, you know, but I mean, there's just, you have that happy, friendly spirit of like, I'm just as happy for everybody else where they pushed and did awesome. And, you know, and then again, for myself, where I was able to push and there's just zero regrets, which is a fun experience.
I did see that, and I don't know where I saw it. You guys, maybe you can recall where Casey did turn around at the escarpment, and you know, four ladies were embracing each other and just looking at the day, realizing we've got a lot of work ahead of us. But isn't it great that we're out here together? And I thought that was a great shot too, and as a bookend to really your finish with Brittany with Claire. Which is you know, you got me doing it, Scott. Which exemplifies our sport, and it was awesome.
Great sportsmanship.
Yeah. Yep. Hey, so if speaking of great sportsmanship, you're running, for instance, you're running step for step at the end with No Hands Bridge. Just say you were, and Claire looks over and says, "Do you have a goo? I am dying here. Do you hand her a goo?" Let's just leave that alone. Let's just leave that alone, Brittany. No.
I would like to say yes, I would.
I'm sure she would for you too.
I think I might say yeah, but it's going to cost you.
Yeah, right, exactly. Give me a head start.
or throw it 10 yards back behind you.
Yeah.
It's on the ground back there. You have to go get it.
Well, good. Hey, well, we appreciate you joining us, and I don't know who made the schedule for a 6 a.m. start on July 5th. I'm not letting you forget that, Scott Warr. I think it might have been you, but it was early for you too, Brittany, and we
thank you.
We appreciate you coming on this podcast.
Hey, Brittany, before you go, could you, I know that you and Cody are working on a technical running camp on your beloved mountains out there in Idaho. Can you tell us a little bit about that camp? I think it's next month.
Yeah, it's August 8th through the 11th. 4 days, really the whole idea is piecing together technical skills and then having a huge mountain adventure. As well as, I mean, I'm pretty passionate about injury prevention and things like that. We have huge support from our sponsors, so we're really, really excited. We still have spots, but it's a go no matter what, and it's in the beautiful White Cloud Mountains. Yeah, our backyard training ground, so we're super excited.
How does someone get registered for this event?
If you go, it's on Ultra Sign Up, Technical Mountain Running Camp with Cody Lind and Brittany Peterson, or at BrittanyPetersonRuns.com, and then there's a link for the training camp.
That sounds really good. So people that want to work on their game and get better, and you want to run downhill fast, you want to know how to hike efficiently up a hill, I'm just projecting what might be there, or maybe I'm just telling my weaknesses, things yeah. I need to work
no,
on.
No, exactly. Yep. And then really, I think, you know, we want to make sure that we can tailor it to anybody's need. You know, so right now I think we have some people that are feeling fairly beginnerish, but they all obviously like they can handle the endurance aspect of being in the mountains all day. But they're, you know, one of our gals is, she said, I'm terrified, I'm going to fall off a mountain, you know, but she wants to address her fears and gain some skills so that she can do some of these Idaho mountain races a little bit better. You know, versus other people where they have a specific goal in mind of, you know, speed goat or the rut or something like that, so that they can be more competitive in true technical skyrunning type races. You know, so we have, you know, we want to make sure that we're not saying that you have to have these mountain skills, and you certainly don't have to be the fastest person out there to be able to come and get some awesome things out of this camp.
Yeah, running downhill is, you've got to have confidence to do that. And if you approach it without the confidence, that's when you get hurt. You've got to.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's important, and it'll improve your game. You end up burning more energy worrying about falling than you do running fast sometimes. I know that because
sure, yeah.
because I've worried about falling, and it slows me down. So I imagine going out there and learning these skills would translate well for future races. And since your background is occupational, what rehab or health? What did you say in the beginning? Occupational therapist.
An occupational therapist.
Yeah, so that gives you insight to talking about some injuries and injury prevention, like you alluded to there. That's very, very important. And
yep,
that
absolutely.
Knowledge is part of our sport. We have to know how to not only run fast, run with confidence, but rehab our bodies after training or races.
Exactly.
Well, I wish you guys luck. This is I think in a relatively crowded space of running camps, I think what you guys have put together is really unique, and I like that it has sort of specific goals to it. You're not just getting together in a nice place and doing a bunch of training runs, but you actually have some goals that the athletes who sign up can expect to achieve out of going to the camp. And by the way, also see one of the most beautiful parts of the country. So I look forward to hearing about it. I assume you're going to have someone taking pictures, because one of the incredible in the country, and hopefully become an annual thing.
Yeah, that is our goal. We're excited.
Hey, and I just pulled it up on Ultra Sign Up, and there's good stuff here. I mean, navigational education. I see something about
exactly.
a hot springs post run adventure.
Oh, can I just put me down for that?
As well as yeah. as well as on the last day, ice baths in the Salmon River.
Oh, I'll miss that, but I will go to the hot springs.
and
yeah, we're trying to keep it like small. You know, we have 10 spots available, where we can have that intimate feel, really share true Idaho. There may be like some specific Idaho camp awards at the end, you know, just having this fun feel and then really sharing what our backyard had to offer. I mean, the
hey, and
sells right off the price, and then like three different hot springs right next to it.
And I don't want to discount this. There's a camp chef, culinary cuisine, might I say.
Well, thank you, Brittany, for joining us, and we hope to you'll be able to join us again sometime to speak more about whatever you want, because it's been a fun conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate the ability to chat with you guys.
So go out and run.
Thanks for coming on, Brittany. Appreciate it.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Go out and run. Mas.
You're a little late there.
Yeah, a little behind AJW.
You're the one that you're the one. It's later in the morning for you. You should be on top.
That's right. Hey, Brittany. Honestly, thank you so much. And you shared such a great ending to that race, and you've made more fans of this sport and made it tougher to get into Western States in the future. So thanks for that.
Yeah.